Welcome back, everyone, to R2Cast number 159.
Just quickly before we start this next episode of the R2Cast All-In series, I want to give you a little heads up that on this series you might be seeing a new sponsor around soon, and all I'm going to mention is they've been mentioned in Forbes. Enjoy the episode.
Our last episode, 158, was with Annie Williams, and Annie is one of the Nuffield cohort that I'm in. So for those of you that watch the Food and Farming side as well as the All-In series, I'm interviewing every single one of them. So it's quite an interesting one. If you're interested in minerals and ruminant livestock in particular, that's really going to be up your street. So Ed might be one for you. It hasn't been released at the time of recording this episode today. The next one after today is with another one of that cohort, Liz Haynes. Liz got quite a really cool story, actually. Liz sort of found her way into farming a bit later in life, but she didn't know that she had ADHD until about maybe the last year, I think it was. And being diagnosed with ADHD made a lot of sense for a lot of things. And then she's looking at her Nuffield scholarship, looking into neurodiversity in farming. So that's going to be really cool, because I think neurodiversity, I think, is the best word to happen to anything in so long. Because the fact that we were looking at someone with autism or ADHD, whatever, you know, insert name, you name it, being called as a disability, I think, caused so many problems with people with these neurodiversities. Now that we've got this word of neurodiversity and realised that there's actually skills that a lot of these people have that we don't, is one of the best things that's happened. So really cool to see what Liz's plans are for our Nuffield. It's really cool, actually. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking to her.
That's class, to be fair.
Yeah.
Because you get so many people that, like, say, I've got autism, you immediately think, oh, they're like disadvantaged in some way, and they're actually smarter than everybody else.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, the ability to channel on some things, find that is amazing. So I had a short chat with Liz down in Exeter last week at the conference, but actually to get sit down for an hour will be really good. Today's episode is another episode of the All-In series. The last one we had was the big 150. Where Ed's friend Rose came on to speak about her time as an Olympian. And what I really enjoyed about Rose was we bring a lot of people onto these podcasts and they've got this going on, this going on, this going on, which is really interesting. Rose didn't care about anything apart from running.
She was a runner.
That's all she did was run. And you're like, what's your plan for when you get out of running? She's like, there's not a plan. I loved it. She was so driven, so focused on that thing. And to see sort of Rose's pursuit towards the Olympics, what will be, next year.
Next year. It's awesome because that's maybe how focused and like single-minded you need to be to get to that kind of top level. Like just not thinking about anything else but running.
And her 5K numbers were ridiculously scary, man.
Yeah.
What was it? I don't want to say it because it was wrong.
15s? We're in the 15s.
Oh, that's so fast.
Zero, though. Was it not 15-0 something? Yeah. 15-04 or something?
I could probably get on Strava, actually. I've got on Strava.
It was mad. Like, we were saying it. And I'm like, I can do a 5K in an hour. pretty impressive. But you have now heard the voice of someone asking the 5K, who I'm going to guess has got quite a good 5K himself. And we'll maybe actually ask him that in a minute. But our guest today in the All-In series is... Oh, actually, just before I say that, we had Rose, the 150, recently. The ones coming up we're getting. So any football fans, we've got someone who's won a Champions League or it was a European Cup back in the day. So absolute elite footballer.
15-16.
That's nuts. Yeah. 15-16 for a 5K.
32-11 for a 10K.
32-11. That's insane.
32-11 for 10K. 10Ks are like Olympic distance. That's our best one.
Mad.
Yeah.
If you want to go listen to that, that's number 150 with Rose Davis. What was I saying? Steve Nicol, Champions League winner with that Liverpool team in the 80s. We've got this lady who we're both looking forward to. We don't actually know her at all. I've only texted her. I drove to Ukraine with her brother, Kate Rawls, who basically has cycled the whole height, I guess you would say, of South America, stopping off in different communities and trying to just get involved in communities as she goes. But what was even more interesting about it is the fact that the way she got that distance was cycling on a bike she made from bamboo. So that's quite cool as well. And then what's the other really cool one? Yeah, we've just got, I'm so excited about this one as well. Gunnar Garforce, who is a guy that has been to every country twice. So that's going to be quite interesting. Yeah. The first
that's a lot of time. It's a lot of traveling.
That's 392 countries is what that is.
Twice.
Yeah. No, 196 twice. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, okay, cool, nuts. Cool. Absolutely nuts. But today is cool for two reasons. First off, we have a professional actor. And second off, we have someone who's a friend of mine at school. So that means he can't say no if I ask for an autograph. That is Mr. Chris Jenks. Chris, would you like to say hello?
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Not at all. Very much looking forward to this. Are you looking forward to it? That is the question.
I am looking forward to it. Yeah, we were kind of talking before off camera or off record that I haven't ever done a podcast before. So this is my podcast virginity, I suppose you'd say. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And like, we actually haven't chatted in a wee while, so it'd be good to catch up and hear what's going on in your life and in my life as well, I suppose. Yeah.
It will be, and it's an utter pleasure to take your flower. Sorry.
Is that the title of the podcast?
Taking an actor's flower. For those of you listening, you can probably hear Ed saying stop and be in a lot of pain. Normally, I would quite enjoy that, but in fairness, at this point, I do feel quite bad. I'm going to almost feel bad for us being funny today because, well, Ed, you tell us what's happened the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, so basically, 2 weeks ago, I was playing rugby and I went to tackle a guy and came out. Well, I didn't come out second best. He knocked the ball on, actually, to be fair. So it was a successful tackle.
You came out second best, Ed.
So his knee hit my temple. I just thought I had a black eye and a concussion. Went in the hospital and they're like, nah, you're all right. And then about 2 weeks later, I could feel it. I was standing next to Wallace like last Sunday and I was like, mate, feel this. It just doesn't feel right. And, like run a finger along my temple and it just sent shivers down our spine. So I was like, oh no, it's not right. Going on Monday. And they're like, yeah, so you've just broke your cheekbone. I was like, badly. And like, well, you're going up to Glasgow on Thursday for surgery. I was like, handy. So I needed to go up to Glasgow on Thursday. Got it put back into place properly. Few plates put in there. So it's 2 days post-surgery, so it's still a bit swollen in that. So whenever I laugh, it's pretty sore. But
and if you were offered to play rugby today, what would the answer be?
No comment. not yet. Next week.
No, not next week.
6 days' time I would play, but I'm not allowed to.
Where did they go in for the surgery? Did they? Because you can't really see anything there.
I've got a scar there, just above the ear, really, on the temple. On the eyelid, there's a tiny.
I can't see anything on the video, but I'll take your word.
Yeah, it's quite hidden. Purple bit.
See, when you think about that.
Yeah. And then there's another couple in my cheek around about here, on the inside of my gum. I can like feel the stitches on my tongue there. So.
It's genius how I've not had that sort of surgery, but I've had 4 keyhole surgeries. And like, I'm a relatively hairy guy, but like, you can't see any of them on my knee now. You just can't. Yeah. Like, it's just amazing what they can do.
I couldn't believe that they didn't need to shave any of my hair off.
Yeah, that's kind of mad.
Like, I wouldn't have thought anything about them shaving that off. Like, I get a fade every few weeks anyway. Like, I don't know why they didn't just, but they didn't even need to. I thought it was mental.
Yeah.
I was only out for an hour and a half. I went under about 12 o'clock. Yes,
really, and
it was like quarter to two when I woke up. I was amazed because I was like, I went into the room about quarter to 12 and then do the anesthetics. Obviously, the general just kind of goes into your arm and that. And woke up and I thought it was going to be like 5 o'clock at night. And I was like, yeah, it's just not even 2 o'clock yet. I was like, what? It's crazy.
I saw a video recently of a guy that was given, I think this was on Instagram, a guy that was given ketamine to have surgery. So you don't go out, but you're kind of like, just, you're so dissociated that.
Tranquilizer more than anything, isn't
it? Yeah. You're kind of just off with the fairies kind of thing. And he was quite like a serious guy. He was like, okay, he was in his 50s. I was like, all right, yeah, yeah. Doctor was explaining to him. And as soon as the injection went in, he was like, woo! Woo, here we go. The doctor's like, all right, okay. All right, easy does it. When he lost it. It's so good.
They were it was quite funny. Like they would say, don't know if you ever had general, like you just get the gas and air and then you've got the drip in the top of your hand and they're just like, yeah, so you're just gonna feel a wee cold sensation run up your arm and you'll wake up and it'll all be over. It's like sweet. So it goes in. And when they're waking me up, I think it must have took them quite a lot of waking me up, because I just heard the voices of Edward, Edward. And then before I know it, there's four of them around me. Edward!
What do you want? Coming back. He's not coming back. Yeah.
And then they kept asking me questions, and I was like,
yeah. Couldn't make any sense. Is it just proper numb for like a few hours?
Yeah, it just, I couldn't feel anything for a few hours, and then it started to wear off, like the heavy painkillers. And I'm like, oh, yes, they've done something there. Yeah.
Have you had general, Chris?
No, I was gonna say, I've never really had a proper injury that I've needed. No. Anything like that for. The most serious injury I've had, and even this is kind of laughable really, but I was playing football at the weekend and I was playing in goals because my 11-a-side team didn't have a goalkeeper, so I went in goals, and the striker like lunged in to get the ball, and I kicked the ball away, but like kicked the bottom of his foot, and I could immediately feel like my foot just like get hot and tingly, and I couldn't stand on it. So I was like, oh God, but we didn't have any subs, and this was in the like the fifth minute. So I was like, right, I guess I'm gonna like hobble around for the rest of the 90 minutes. And then went to A&E, and by that point I sort of hoped that I'd done something like bad enough that I could have a story about it, because I was like, well, I can't walk in it and it hurts. So I hope at least I get a good injury out of it. And the nurse literally grabbed it, pressed it in a couple of places, and was like, it's not broken, it's just like soft tissue. Grow up. I've got people that need my help. Fuck off. So yeah, no, but I've been hobbling around the house for the last couple of days.
I can just see what Netflix would think if you couldn't do a show because you're too busy with your Sunday league football. Like chasing the dreams, you know, chasing the dreams.
you have to do like a doctor's like they give you an MOT basically before you sign on to do any show.
Right.
That's basically like you're not planning on going skiing at any point in the next few days. You're not going to go skydiving. You're not going to, you don't have any injuries. And it's basically to cover exactly that, just so that you're fit and
yeah,
to do the show.
Well, we've mentioned Netflix there, Chris, but I mean, some people that might know you as Steve DC Murray, is Archibald, I think is another name you've played. But like before we get into that, let's hear about Chris Jenks. Tell us a bit about Chris. Even go back to like the days where I would have known you at the time.
Yeah. So grew up on the Isle of Arran. I think, well, I was in the year above you in school. One of my best friends growing up was Kirsty McAllister. She lived just down the road. And I think she's your cousin, isn't she?
She's not my cousin, but she might as well be. She's like some parents and parents are best friends. Right. Yeah, no relation.
You guys
spent
cousins.
Our lives in each other's houses. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Actually ask her your number to get in touch with you for this. But yeah, she's not my cousin.
All right. So yeah, kind of just like grew up island life. Was very kind of like sporty, I guess you'd say. Did a lot of cross-country running. Liked football. Wasn't a lot of football on the island, but like those that random like S2 games that our chemistry teacher would organize would do them. And kind of got into acting and drama and stuff like that really through like youth theater courses on the mainland. So I'd go away to Glasgow and do Scottish youth theater, and I'd go and do national youth theater. I was down in London and little bits like that really. So I guess by the end of school, kind of like sixth year, my dad sort of wanted me to go and study English at university. And I wanted to go to drama school. And that was a bit of a like, oh, what are you going to do? What's going to happen? And then eventually I was like, oh, I think I really want to go to drama school. So started applying for drama schools. And there's lots around the country. You could apply for many, but they all have quite extensive like audition processes. So I sort of picked six that I thought I'd quite like, and spent a while going around the country auditioning for them, and then got into Bristol Old Vic and went there for 3 years from 2014 to 2017, and then moved to London and got an agent and started auditioning for shows, and kind of that's really led to just, you know, me being an actor now, really.
There's probably quite a lot to break up there, but just one thing I want to say to both you, Ed, and the listeners, he wasn't just a random chemistry teacher. He had actually played in the Scottish Cup.
All right.
He did actually play. I don't know if you knew that, Chris, but he played
the Scottish Cup. No, I never knew that, yeah.
He played for Glasgow Uni in the Scottish Cup qualifying round.
I remember my older brother, Michael, played in those games quite a lot as well. And he, I remember he did step overs, but it was like right by our penalty area, like by the corner flag. He was like doing step overs. And I remember Mr. McCartney being like, "We're not in the Premier League. What are you doing?"
I heard him say that term quite a few times that's Ladies' Day. Who do you think you are, son? he's a good guy.
Go to shout from the touchline.
Mr. McCartney, if you're listening, there were good times. We were scared of you, but there were good times. did you go, do I have a vague recollection of you doing something at Lambda, or is that complete nonsense?
So Lambda was one of the drama schools that I auditioned for.
Okay.
So I actually got into Lambda and Bristol, and then ended up going to Bristol. But yeah, that was one of the ones I auditioned for. And Paul Tinto, who kind of started the trend of actors going to, or people from Aaron going to drama school. He's a few years above. He went to Lambda as well. So it's kind of how it was on the radar.
I always remember, like, I got involved not in the drama school side, that not like the drama association side, but did like the school concerts at the end of the year for literally my last year. And I loved it. But you were always around that scene. Was like, as a kid, and I think we'd mentioned, I might have said it to Ed off camera, I can't remember if I said it on or off, that like you, like go and study English or go and study anything was probably an option for you because you were good at school as well. But was there a time in school where you were like, I like being on stage, but I actually want to go further. I want to take this somewhere different. Or did that come when you started to leave school?
I don't know. I think I've always been like very ambitious. And I think I've always been very, I don't know. I don't know if you'd call this just like entitled maybe, or like self-important, but there was kind of a point, like it didn't occur to me that I was just doing like school plays on the Isle of Arran. Like I thought it was like really important and I wanted to do as good a job as I could. And I kind of always thought, I was like, oh, I want to, whatever I do, I want to do it to like a really high standard. And I want to, you know, part of that was going over to these like drama courses on the mainland. But I think that, yeah, I mean, there was a point right at the beginning, I just enjoyed being involved and enjoyed kind of being, because the first one I did was Oliver in like S1.
Oh wow, that was a while ago. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So I was like, I was playing Oliver, and then there was all these like sixth year kids that were in it as well. So I felt like I was in this gang that like all the sixth year kids were like hanging out with me and all this kind of stuff. So I just like being involved basically at that point. And then as it continued through school, I started thinking, could do this as a career or that kind of thing.
Nice. The thing that jumped out to me, like you kind of, I feel it was quite a big, big jump. You were just, you said, yeah, so I went to uni to do drama, and then I got an agent and I moved to London and got an agent. How was that transition? How did that kind of work? Because that's a massive jump moving to London.
Yeah, it is a big jump. So actually you get, at the end of drama school, you get a showcase, which everyone in your year, they hire a theatre in London and you perform a monologue and a duologue and a song and stuff like that. And all the agents and casting directors come to that to pick out who they like, basically. So I got an agent from that. A couple of people that emailed me after that. But as an experience, it can be quite odd because there's people that fly off the shelves. Like they've been speaking with agents for a really long time. I remember we went to like a Wetherspoons after our showcase and all kind of sat there like, just the adrenaline had crashed and we're all just sat there like, oh my God, like I hope someone emails me kind of thing.
Yeah.
Freshen your phone. And people were going off to like sign with agents there and then, but, and they had like five that wanted to get in contact with them. But for a lot of people, kind of including myself, you didn't hear anything for about 2 weeks. So that was a bit of a nerve-wracking process. But, you know, really thankfully, someone did email me. And then it went from there, basically.
I almost feel like, and I'm probably basing this on the Big Bang Theory from Penny's attempts to become an actress, but is it not quite a demoralizing process? Because I feel like you're like chasing, maybe this is not, and I maybe have based this off of TV, is it like you're chasing parts and getting knocked back, or is that not how it works? Is it more your agent sorts you one and you go to it? How does that come about, I guess?
Yeah, so the way it works is they would email you with an audition to do, and they put you up for part, and then you either do a self-tape, which is like you just film it in your house, which you like, I've got a ring light here, and you'd use a ring light and your phone, and you'd just phone it, you'd record it, and then send it off, and then you might not hear anything, or you might hear back and get a recall and all that kind of stuff. But it can be demoralizing. There's definitely an element to it of when you go in and meet people, you obviously want to represent yourself in the best way, and you get dressed up, you kind of put on moisturizer, you do your hair, get a nice haircut or whatever, and you go in and really try and sell yourself, and then leaving that and coming away from it and the reality of like, well, I guess I'll go back home now. You go to bed, go back home. That kind of oscillating nature of, it's one of the exciting things about it, don't get me wrong, but like the adrenaline peaks and then the crashes of just,
yeah,
that can be a bit draining sometimes. Yeah.
Could you tell us about your time? I always like to hear this in different courses and whatnot. Your time at uni, like what is drama school like? Well, how does that, I assume it's not like, I don't want to say normal university because that's not fair, but I assume it's not like a lot of the normal courses. I assume it operates differently. I can't imagine a dissertation. I would assume more of a project or a play is created or something like that. How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So you kind of, it's 5 days a week. You'd go in from, I think it was 8:15 to 6 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah.
Long days, in fairness. Yeah.
Long days, yeah. A lot of dance workshops. So you do like tango, salsa, waltzes, like all this kind of stuff. You do singing lessons. And then apart from that, you'd have a lot more acting-centered classes, obviously. But I mean, I think I went when I was 18, and it can be a very competitive atmosphere, and it can, but I think with creativity, you need to recharge sometimes. You need to go away and feel ownership of it as well. And I think one of the hard things about drama school is that you're constantly being asked to be creative and you're exhausted. So you might have I remember doing a monologue for like a class on a Friday, and it was a Shakespeare monologue, and I learned it maybe the night before, like as I was going into this, I didn't know what I was saying. I did it, and the acting tutor gave me loads of feedback, and I was like, yeah, yeah, you're probably right. I just went back home and I was like, I just don't have any more energy to give to this.
Yeah.
On the other side of it, it's like, you know, you're doing it for 3 years nonstop. So it would be amazing if you didn't learn anything. Like you come out of it having a lot of knowledge and a lot of just sort of like know-how about different stuff works.
Sounds intense. That sounds intense. Yeah. Does it have quite a, it almost sounds like that, do you know what this is reminding me of? It's reminding me when we spoke to Duncan, you know, of the army sort of, you start and then there's massive amounts of dropouts because of the intensity.
Yeah.
Is it like that, or does everyone that goes go through it?
Yeah, I'd feel bad comparing it to an army.
For sure, I know.
But there's that we didn't have any dropouts. I think the year above us had a couple, maybe. We didn't have any dropouts. I think it's as well. There was an MA course that joined up with our BA course, and they'd all been to uni before, and were like 25, and we were all 21, and them coming in was like so refreshing. Mm. I was like, oh my God, they know what they're like, and they know what life's like, and they know they're not really just hyperactive, insecure 21-year-olds, and that was just so refreshing.
Yeah.
What age are you, Ed?
22.
Oh, you've got a year on us. It was.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
He's an adult now.
100%.
It's so yeah, like Ed said, I was the exact same. You've got that agent, is it sort of like, it sounds like a really stupid question because it's almost definitely a yes, but is it your job to make sure you've got a good relationship with that agent? And it's like that an agent that you got, well, that must have been 21, 22. Have you had them ever since, or have you bounced about agents?
So the original agent that I had was a guy called James Davies. And he was really cool because he was about 30 when he signed me. And so that was quite nice because it felt like he was at the beginning of his career as an agent and I was at the beginning of my career, so we could kind of go up together and, you know, relate to each other really well. He very selfishly left to go and work for a charity. So I then was like, oh, need to find a new agent. But the agent I have now she's amazing. She's a really high caliber of agent, which is great for me from a professional point of view. And I got that through Sex Education because the casting director of Sex Education gave me her name and was like, she'd be good to contact. So that's how that came about.
Was Sex Education your first break, or was there something before that?
It was definitely my first big thing. Before that, I actually did a drama set in a fashion, teen drama set in a fashion school, which in some ways there's like definitely parallels between the two shows, but I'd been filming that for 6 months and there was like 20 something episodes of that, so it was like a lot of content, and because I was only in the last couple of episodes of season one of Sex Education, I only filmed that for like 4 days. So in my head, I was like, well, this fashion thing is the big one.
Yeah.
And then it was only once it came out that suddenly it became this big phenomenon and, you know, everyone was talking about it and that was incredible. But I'd only done 4 days on it. So I felt a bit like, I wasn't really part of it. I was like, oh yeah, no, me too. Yeah, I'm part of that thing. And then as the years went on, I became much more involved and felt like I was like, oh yeah, okay, this is what I'm doing.
I can see why, because I mean, and this isn't me in any way comparing us, Chris, but it's the truth. I've done a 4-day shoot before. Like, genuinely, that's insane that's comparable to half a year. Like, that's mental, isn't it? And just, I've actually got quite a few questions, and I'm sure Ed does as well. About the sort of sex ed, and then not about sex education. We don't need to go there.
He probably does need it to be.
Yeah, I don't know how. I don't know how it goes in. No, but
we'll do
that
after.
There's one question.
Yeah, off camera.
That's it. Your face, all right?
Yeah, it's fucking painful.
The thing I really want to ask, and this has always been my image of this, because I really enjoyed drama, and it would be a complete lie to say I never considered trying what you've done. But I think the difference was it was a consideration. It wasn't like you were saying doing it. That's the difference. But the reason I'm saying that is I thought about a lot of it. And in my head, the university, the drama school, whatever, is very stage-based. Mm. Whereas, you know, the careers, I'm guessing a lot of people, certainly in your case, go into is, you know, TV and film, which is a completely different thing.
Yeah.
So does drama school set you up for that, or is there still modules that are involved on sort of script-based filming that you can literally learn as you're going it, you know, as opposed to sort of the one that you have to know a full hour's worth of work for being on stage?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, drama school doesn't, well, when I was there, it didn't really set you up for screen acting. There was a couple of modules where someone would come in with a camera and they'd give you a script and you'd go away and film it and come back and talk about it. But it was like a week. And it's also quite hard to learn when you're not on a film set or like a TV set, because so much of it is just about like enabling yourself to give the best performance at the right time. So just knowing that before the camera starts rolling, there's going to be someone that's like, do you want a cup of tea? Someone's going to be doing your hair. Someone's going to be like stuffing a mic up the back of your jacket. The director might be saying something. So there's like a lot of your attention's being required by a lot of people. So it's about focusing that in the right way and just keeping confident in yourself of like, even though this all costs a lot of money, I need to forget about all that and just kind of do my own thing and be really playful when the camera starts rolling. And so it's a really steep learning curve. And you know, I'm definitely still learning stuff now, of course. I know I've only been doing it, well, I don't know, 7 years, but there's lots to learn, yeah.
Yeah,
And sorry, Ed, on you.
It's so when you started filming Sex Education, obviously because it was the first series, you'd have no idea how big that was going to be.
Yeah.
See, and like so that was a Netflix original. Is that any different to what it is when it's like not a Netflix original? Was it more serious, or like was there anything different because it was a Netflix original?
In general, it's all been very similar. It might be kind of like a budget thing, maybe. So you'd notice that they've got a crane with a big light attached to it, and you're like, oh, that's gonna cost a lot to have. not really. It's very, very similar. It's very similar.
It's funny though, you always think Netflix, I think in my head, Netflix originals have been like a separate thing. But Netflix is almost like, and I might be using the wrong term here, but it's almost a studio in itself now, is it not? Like
100%.
Netflix are producing. Yeah. So, yeah.
They produce a lot of stuff, but they also buy shows that have been made by other production companies and other channels and stuff. Like loads of BBC shows are on Netflix and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, did you know that there was going to be a season two before it was like released onto Netflix, or was it just obviously when it kind of blew up
Yeah.
that you?
It was it, so I do you know what? I can't remember really. I think it was after it had come out, there was a big buzz about it. And then the kind of whisperings were like, oh yeah, I think they're gonna do it again. And then it officially got announced and yeah.
Yeah. And did you know, like, from the start of when it got announced that you're going to do a second series, that you were going to be involved?
No. I sort of hoped I would be, and kind of I guess luckily for me, the character that I had all my scenes with, Amy, was a main character of the show. So, which was lucky, it was lucky for me because I could kind of bank on the fact that she would be in it and I could kind of
She was definitely gonna be in
ride
the
on her
cast.
coattails a little bit.
Yeah, because like when Wallace like first said to me, like, oh, I've got Chris Jenks coming on, and I was in Sex Kid Education, but he wasn't like one of the main actors. And then I looked, I was like, you were in like a lot, like you had quite, especially at the end of that first series, like you were really quite up there. Like obviously there was gonna Otis, Maeve, and Amy, but like kind of just below that, I would say you were pretty high up with the kind of screen time that you're on there.
I guess what I meant was he's on it, but he's not Gillian Anderson. Because in my defense, and I'll hold my hands up, I watched nothing, as you know, like nothing. But I did watch the start of the first series of Sex Education, It was near lockdown, was it not? It was during
COVID. Yeah, something like that.
But so I'd never, apart from when I saw on social media, like someone had posted a photo to your Facebook or whatever, like, oh, you're Chris on the telly. That was the first time I saw it. And I went and watched that episode, and I'll be honest, that is all I've watched. So Ed's probably seen more of it. Well, definitely seen more of it than I have.
No, like if you asked me who Steve from Sex Education was, I could describe kind of who that was, to be fair.
Yeah. What would you say?
Quite a funny character, to be fair. I actually really enjoyed just how you're such a gym freak but a maths freak at the same time, like on the quiz team, but you're doing press ups between the quiz sets and that. I found it quite relatable, to be honest.
Steve is Chris. Steve is Chris. That's clearly what Chris is. Steve is
I think as the series went on, the nerdiness got more and more and the gym stuff got less and less. Like I saw sort of wanted a few more like scenes where I was like, I don't know, pulling cars along or something like that. Yeah. Like just to reestablish his.
was it not right at the end of the series when you like won the quiz and you just did this massive bicep curl like this?
Yeah. Like, do you know what? That was jokes to film because the director, he's like just a very, very like funny and like playful guy on set, Ben Taylor. Was just like shouting stuff to do to celebrate. So he was like, jump up and down, roll around on the floor, give Maeve a big hug, whatever. And he was like, Chris, give us a big flash of the guns. Hanging like that. And it was in it. And like, it's turned into a GIF now that like a few of my friends send to me, which is quite funny. There's just a GIF, like pulling down the sleeve.
Class.
It's quite funny that because I don't know if you'll even know I'm aware of this, Chris, but you went away from school and I remember you came back. I think it was to help with a drama play thing where you were behind the scenes and I was, oh, Chris is here. I'm going to go say hi. But you'd went away, I think it'd be fair to say, quite a skinny guy. And he just came back jacked like 6 months later. Like, huge.
I love that.
Like, it was like that. It literally left like this really skinny guy that you could easily knock over playing football. Like it would get past you, but if it was you against him, you don't. And then I'm like, oh shit, Chris is bigger than me now.
And do you kind of, obviously, so what kind of age would you say you got into kind of gymming and that type of thing?
Like a bit. I'd say properly when I was 18. Yeah. So I went to drama school. Yeah, there was a guy in third year when I was in first year that was like a bit of a fitness freak. And he ran these like boot camp classes every day before drama school. So I just like did them every day for like 3 months. And then I remember I came back and did this like running. I went running basically with a running group and I remember I was running along and there was this runner who I think she does like quite a lot of like hill running and stuff like that on iron, and I was running along and I was like keeping up with her and then I like overtook her and she was like, do you run a lot, do you? And I was like, oh, like a bit, yeah, but I've just been like dancing a lot at drama school. And I think she found that very irritating because it was technically true, but I'd also been doing these like boot camps thing. But I think she was like, who is this like young pretender that's like, oh, I've been dancing at drama school and now I'm really fast kind of thing.
You might have started like proper working out then, but you're always fit. Like you always did a wee bit of football and
you always.
I think it would be wrong of us to bring someone that's been on Sex Education on and not ask what are some of the main characters real people like. I mean, what's Gillian Anderson like?
I've met her once.
Yeah.
So I was dancing. Me and Amy were like on set and we were kind of just like dancing like this because we were a bit bored. And Amy was looking over my shoulder and she stopped dancing and I carried on. And I turned around and Gillian Anderson was there filming us.
Right.
And the first time that I ever met her, and she was filming, and she was like, "Carry on." I was like, "All right, oh, this is." And then, she stopped filming and was like, "Oh, great, nice to meet you, whatever." And then she went, "Oh, it didn't record," and put the phone back up. I was like, Go on, dance.
Literally a dance monkey.
Yeah, exactly, dancing away. And then she was like, great, and just left. And I was like, there you go. But I mean, she's lovely. It's just like a very odd way to meet someone.
So just kind of tracking back, just when you said about running, you asked about Rose's 5K time. We've had a wee bit of interest in that. What's yours?
It's much to my annoyance, it's 20 minutes and 5 seconds.
Oh, that's brutal.
That's horrible.
That is horrific. Like the benchmark of having a really good 5K sub 20. Like if you can say you've got a sub 20,
are you sub 20?
That's class. No.
Right.
No. I think if I trained 5K, like I was doing long distance running 2 or 3 times a week, I could get sub 20 fairly. Right.
Was that recent, Chris, or was that a while ago?
It's a while ago.
Right, okay. Okay.
If you told me to run a 5K right now, I think I'd be buzzing with a sub 22.
Yeah, I think 22, realistically. Yeah. Realistically. Yeah. But like
even getting in the 20s, that is quick. Like that's real good. Was that road?
That was road, yeah. That was road.
Yeah. Because obviously if you're doing it on a track, if you did that on a track, you would get sub 20, no problem.
Yeah, because it's more springy.
Yeah, and it's just, well, there's like nothing changes. There's nothing to worry about. You just got track in front of you instead nothing of crossing a road. Yeah, that's the fact. That's your 5 seconds right there. Because I know someone that did a like 16 and a half 5K, and that was on a track, but he couldn't do a sub 17 on a road.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Big difference. Oh, massive. But that spikes in that end. Yeah. Sweet things like that makes a huge difference.
Apparently the way to do it.
5K, 5 seconds is absolutely nothing. Like we're talking about you getting a 1 second faster split per K. Yeah, like, that's nothing really, is it?
That's true, yeah. Apparently the way to do it is like train long distance. train long runs.
Yeah.
But like don't just do time trial like 5K, because that's what I did. I was just like,
yeah, you get so sick of it.
Yeah. Sorry, what were you saying?
I was saying I just feel so out of these conversations. Well, in fairness, I'm trying to think when we last met. We probably were just after school, so I haven't lost weight since then, but I've lost weight since like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, about 4 stone down. But I used to walk like a lot, and I can't say that anymore. And I've done like 3 10Ks in the last maybe week and a half. And I used to do like maybe, and I'm talking walking 10Ks. I would do 100K a week for quite some time. But back on Aaron, Chris, funnily enough, I got hit by a car and I tore my calf. And I cannot get it to that stage that I got again. Been really? Physio, minorly walking. Yeah, almost there. I think I'm almost there.
Takes a long time.
Does it hurt when you walk, or is it like...
I don't know if it's hurt or it doesn't do what I want. It's like it's not fully like just lifting my heel up correctly. Like,
did you calf raises and that?
Yeah, I've tried a lot of calf raises. Yeah,
just like because it takes so long. Like if you think you've torn your calf, like the strength, like you'll take all the strength away from it.
Yeah,
and it'll completely deteriorate. So you need to build up your strength of like whole leg.
We'll get there.
It takes a long time.
There's a bit of a running joke with this podcast for a while because like second episode all in with Ed was a professional footballer. Third was a British timber sports champion. Fourth was someone who'd been through the army. Fifth was a volleyball player that's almost on the cusp of professional. Oh. And I just felt like it was like fit guy and me, and that's just the same again.
I used to do about 10 to 15 minutes to talk about fitness, and Wallace is sitting there like, I like to walk.
That's all I've got. That's all I have.
Maybe that's the sub genre of the podcast, is like two fit guys than me kind of thing.
We should called that. We should have called this series that two fit guys and Wallace. Because I mean it genuinely is becoming that.
I'm trying to think of, like, you know the TV show 2 and a Half Men. I'm trying to think of a spin-off of that somehow.
Yeah, there is something there.
There's something there, isn't there?
Two six
two and a double men.
Four men. Just two men and Wallace.
Four men, three mics. Yeah.
Two men. Yes.
What was that?
That's
one?
Good. Four men, three mics.
Ah, oh, that's good.
Oh, God. Oh, funny, funny. Chris, we've obviously Sex Education is where a lot of people have seen you, and I was actually showing you to my partner's sister this morning. She's like, yes, yes, love him. So yeah, but you've been in a few other things. Tell us about them as well. It's always quite interesting to hear about. I mean, you're probably, I'm guessing, maybe this is wrong, but in my head you're known for Sex Education. In my head personally, you're known for being a prefect, but there's other things there as well. So tell me the other shows you've done.
Yeah, so I've done a couple of other shows. Karen Perry, which was a Scottish crime drama that was on ITV last year, I think it was. So we're doing a second season of that next year, which is very exciting. That was good as well because I could kind of move away from, obviously I played a kid in Sex Education, and I'd kind of played another school kid in The Athena, which is the fashion show that I did. So it was nice to play an adult and a detective, and there's a few more serious storylines to that, which was good. Did another show, which was Miracle Workers. And I don't know if many people in the UK know it because it's on US TV. But
I just know it's on IMDb.
Yeah, so that was
Daniel Radcliffe, though. It's not like it's
nice,
but that's what I was going to say, because the it was wild to film, because it filmed in Prague, and the first scene that I had to do was in a forest in the outskirts. It 6 a.m. It was really, really cold. It was -5 degrees, and I had to give Daniel Radcliffe the Heimlich maneuver.
Hey, okay.
And he's very small. So I was like, it's an absolute pleasure to, Daniel Radcliffe's one of my kind of childhood, for a lot of people, Harry Potter, it's just mind blowing that I'd 100%. Ever get something with him.
Yeah.
And he was delightful, very, very nice. And I was like, it's really nice to meet you. So do you mind if I put my arms around you and lift you up kind of thing? Cause he's quite small and I'm quite tall. So there's a big height difference. And he was like, yeah, go, no worries, mate, go, go for it. So I was like, a couple of hours into meeting this guy, picking him up, and he was flailing his arms around. It's just the most surreal thing in the world.
That is quite surreal. I kind of want to watch that just for that scene.
I know.
I'll try and find a clip of that scene and send it to you afterwards, because it's very funny.
So what height is he? 5'10" or something like that, for sure?
I don't know. He's quite small. He might be 5'9".
He's massive then, isn't he?
Ed's about 4'3". It's that, right. So tell us about that, because we've had I can't remember, Jack Iredale, who was the footballer. He's actually my cousin, but he spoke about playing against someone that he'd, that's terrible. No, he spoke about playing in front of Harry Kewell. So my cousin's, he's born in Scotland, but he moved to Australia and 6 months old, something like that. And I know you play football, Chris, but I don't know how much you watch football. You know Harry Kewell, that used to play for Liverpool, Australian guy. Yeah. When Jack was playing in League Two, he was playing against, I can't remember what team Harry was managing, but playing against a team that Harry was managing, and he was like, this was so surreal. This was amazing. So I assume that's somewhat similar to that. Yeah. What's it like to go from sitting on Christmas Day or every, you were one of the folk that went when they came out at midnight, weren't you? You went to Harry Potter films I thought that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going one of them too, to
where
be
you?
Fair.
Well, I've only seen one.
The Half-Blood Prince Part 2, I think I did that at midnight.
Yeah, so you've literally went out of your way at midnight to wait for a film, to watch someone, not just him, I know, but he's the main character. And then now you're literally working alongside him. What's that like? That's insane.
That's actually unbelievable.
Yeah.
I can't fathom that.
It was, he made it very nice, because I was in the hair and makeup truck getting, because I had a big wig and I was fake tanned up and all this kind of stuff. So I was getting that done. And then he got on at the other end of the hair and makeup truck, And it can be quite a difficult environment to socialize in because everyone's facing the same way and everyone's kind of doing their own thing. So he made an effort to like come down and say hello and introduce himself and just be like, welcome. If you've got any problems, like let me know and all that kind of stuff. So he was so charming and kind that it made it very easy. And to be fair as well, I was kind of just like dissociating the whole time. Yes. I was like, I couldn't relate in my head. The guy that was like, Expelliarmus was the guy that was stood there.
Yeah.
Like just, you know,
it's having so surreal, isn't it?
Getting his makeup done. It's just, you know.
I'm just picturing you there, like, don't say Harry. But
that was a big thing, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of leads me to a question of, is that a, like, he is Harry Potter. He's Harry Potter more than he's Daniel Radcliffe. And is that a thing that affects him? Like, does he almost struggle to? Because I'm not gonna lie, when I looked on the IMDb thing 2 minutes ago and I said it's Daniel Radcliffe, my head was probably about to say Harry Potter. Is that a thing that affects him? He's like, well, I can't be anyone but Harry Potter now. He's always going to be that. Is that a thing?
You know what? I don't know. I assume so, yeah, because everywhere he goes on the street, people will scream Harry Potter at him or know him for that and want to ask him questions about that. So I imagine there is a bit of like, can you treat me like a person? But I mean, it's also, you understand it from like a fan's point of view.
He can't complain, I suppose. Like, it's because of the amount of fame he's got from something like that. But he's been in a lot of things, though.
He's only 34.
Yeah, well, he started at 12. He literally did a Harry Potter, and he was the exact age.
That's insane.
He rose to it.
At 12. Go on, Zane. He done Chris?
He's done a lot of parts which are a bit wacky and a bit kind of out there. Yeah. So I imagine there's part of that that's like trying to make an impact outside of Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. I remember him from there was a film that he did. Oh, it was a huge film. That's terrible. It was like a car.
Oh, Harry Potter.
yeah. That's
was it like a card trick one? It had Morgan Freeman in it.
Daniel Radcliffe.
Now you see me, now you don't.
Yeah, now you see me. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. He's the bad guy in it.
I would never have said that had you not said that.
I remember him quite well from that. And that was like the first thing that I seen him. Like, that's the first thing I watched with Daniel Radcliffe. And it wasn't Harry Potter. I was like, that is weird. It's just, I feel like I actually might like some people would struggle to watch things when. It's because he's done eight, like he's literally done eight films of the same character. So it's like doing a big TV series as well, I suppose.
And not just people. Like, I haven't seen them, but you know, not just eight.
You've not seen Harry Potter.
I went to Goblet of Fire. I actually think,
but you've not watched the others. Might like, have been even after
with you, Chris. Not with you, but I think a group was at school with. But I fell asleep at the start. I never watched it.
I don't get you at times.
Yeah, no, you don't get me often.
Not seen Harry Potter.
My point is, I've not seen it, but. It's not like
so
it's
uneducated
just...
with something.
Apparently the master's degree doesn't cut it. I haven't seen Harry Potter.
No, it doesn't. You're socially uneducated.
That's such a cutting thing to say.
I thought that. It's like...
Wouldn't have said it if it wasn't true.
It's like livelihood for some folk, though, isn't it? Is it eight films?
Yeah, eight films. They went on a real money-making spin and decided to split this seventh one into two.
Yeah, they went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And it was the seventh part was one, twice. Part two. I thought it was the sixth, but yeah.
Was he in the like spin-off ones?
No. That was set in the past.
So yeah, that's right. I never got on board with them ones, like the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Oh, is that Harry Potter based? Yeah. Can I see if I can name them?
Go for it.
I think I'll manage.
I can't tell you if you're right.
The Philosopher's Stone, but I believe in America it's called the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah.
Is it Chamber of Secrets next? And then Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah.
Goblet of Fire's 4, because that's the one I saw. Order of the Phoenix. Oh, what's 6? Is Is it Half Blood Prince split in two?
Yeah.
No,
it's
no,
got
no.
Death. It's got death in it.
Is six. Yes,
Half Blood Prince is six.
Yeah.
So it's another film that's split in two.
Yes.
Deathly.
Yeah, you've literally said it.
Hallows.
Yes.
Deathly Hallows.
Okay, there you go.
That's quite good.
Good
effort. I was like kind of named the good rugby players.
Yeah. I mean, you just named three people with like a million followers or whatever.
But... Yeah, pretty much. She's on Instagram. That's not quite true. I don't know if you're right about it.
Give you credit for one.
Yeah, it's kind of you. It's kind of you.
Pretty sure I said his name the day before.
Shut up. You're very much spending time at the minute on TV, Chris. Is there a goal to try film?
Do you know what? It's really interesting you ask that because I started a production company 3 months ago, 4 months ago.
Well,
which basically started as like a way of, because I want to write and I want to direct and produce and kind of expand my what I'm doing basically. So I literally was sitting in a hotel in Wales and I made an Instagram account for production company and just like put it up. And I was like, oh,
plug it.
What's it called?
It's called Wrong Room Productions.
Wrong Room. Okay.
So I made that. And then all of a sudden people started messaging me, sending me scripts and being like, oh, so you've got a new production company. How would you feel about doing this? Would you feel about making this? So it kind of just went from there, really. So we're producing a short film at the moment called Anne Sons, which is set in a funeral parlor. It's about a dad planning for his own funeral with the help of his two kind of begrudging sons. It's like a, it's sort of like a gothic comedy, really. But you know, it's also about bereavement and dealing with, you know, the difficult emotions around death and how communication can be very difficult. So we're putting a Kickstarter campaign to try and fund it up online like in the next couple of days. So I imagine by the time that this has come out, then it will be up there. So if any of your listeners feel like helping us fund it, then we'd be really grateful. Even if you just check out the page, that'd be cool. Yeah, I should say that as well.
This is interesting to me because there's in my head, right, in the production, directing, acting sphere, you've got actors, you've got producers, you've got writers. I guess producers and writers are kind of together. Is it normal for people to do both?
A lot of people do move from acting into directing and producing and writing, partly because it gives you more ownership over what you're doing, and also from like a business point of view, when you're acting, you're relying on people to give you parts. Whereas if you've got a production company or like you're directing and writing, it's just other sources of income. And creatively, instead of getting an audition and it's like, do I want to do this part in this film that someone else wrote? Or do I want to do what I find creatively exciting? That's a real plus to it.
That's really cool. That's really cool that you started that. Fair effort.
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to chat with you probably at some other time, but like about, because you've obviously created a brand and a platform from scratch, really. So that'd be cool.
It's a kind of happy to have that chat. It's a kind of tricky comparison because a few folk have asked me this, you know, you've created a brand from whatever, but I created a brand from something that I was doing anyway. I didn't care if it made money. So it wasn't a thing to make money. It was a thing that I enjoyed doing for a year, and then
it monetizes itself. Yeah, really, doesn't it?
It's kind of a different setup if you're starting trying to make money.
I'm not starting to make money, which is
right.
Yeah, so it's we're not going to make money for a while. Yeah, so in a way, I suppose it's similar. But yeah, that's interesting. So you got it going, and then the money came later.
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, like, I don't have a massive social media. I mean, Chris, you've got what, 60 odd thousand followers on Instagram? I think,
90.
what, 90 odd is it? Sorry, a
Yeah,
lot of
80,
thousand followers.
it's 86.7, I think.
That's very specific. Someone that reads their Instagram. he's actually got a counter behind the camera.
Yeah, I can see it going down right now.
I think, I mean, my total following across everything's just hitting 10. Like, I haven't chased following. I've chased monetization once I realized it was possible. So, like, it only started as a thing I love doing. I love talking to people. I love sharing stories of folks' lives. And then I started doing more of it. And then the views built up. So, like, that was basically, I got to the stage before I was making money that my business plan was, this has to be a product that I do because I enjoy and then luckily makes money. I didn't want to chase a business. I'm not saying that won't happen in the future, but at the minute that was the plan. Which was quite rewarding actually, because
Yeah.
you could take something that, like, on the evenings I would just phone someone and have a chat, and then suddenly that was a thing, you know. So it was quite nice that it worked that way. So yeah, no, happy to have a chat. I wouldn't say I'm a good person to take advice from, but yeah, it'd be quite cool. So you've as a youngster, all your stuff was on stage. You've sort of moved on to TV. You've looked at production. You've started a production company. Film's probably something you've considered. Do you ever see yourself trying stage again?
So I did a play like t what are we in 2023? The beginning of 2022, at the Sheffield Crucible, which was cool. It's a really nice
Oh.
theater, and it's yeah, so obviously where they have the snooker and stuff. So I was like buzzing to be there. part of me forgot how hard theater is, like how much energy it takes. So like the whole time I was doing TV, I was like, oh, I'd love to get back in the theater, like tread the boards again, this kind of thing. And then I was doing it, I was like, this is such hard work.
Yeah.
It was also a tough experience because, oh God, why was it a tough experience? There was just certain stuff within the like work environment that was like tricky to deal with, like just interpersonal stuff that was made it hard work. And we didn't really, it was a very ambitious production and we didn't have a lot of time to rehearse it. So we're kind of figuring things out as we were going. So that was hard. It was quite a hard experience. I found it quite tricky. Being away from home as well, just new city by yourself, that kind of thing. But I mean, it's not to say I wouldn't do it again. I'd love to be in a show again, a theater show. Because like you say, that's what I started doing. So
And probably a caveat, not any listener is expecting, but if you want to hear an episode of the R2 cast with someone who's competed snooker at the Crucible, go to 147 with Hilary Reid, which was intentionally put as number 147. It's not just per chance.
oh yeah,
It's
that's good. Yeah.
yeah.
That flew over my
It
oh.
was, I think it's flown over everyone's head. I was so proud of
Yeah.
it, but no one got it. It was it,
He
that's
planned it for like 50 episodes. He's like, that 147, that's gonna be a snooker player. And then nobody's gave him any credit for
We're
it.
gonna have to get darts in 20 episodes. Like, one of
Yeah, I
these got to
know.
be darts,
Yeah.
and it's actually a really funny episode. It's a lady. I think said she was in her 70s, and she broke into snooker scene when it was very much male dominated. And then I got the impression she just hadn't just told the story in a while. We
Yeah.
got no words in. She just told her story, and what a
Yeah.
story it was! It
It
was so good. Like,
was like an hour and a half of two questions.
I think you asked one question,
I
didn't
asked
you?
one, yeah. You maybe squeezed in two.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it was good, but that's pretty cool, Crucible. That's
Yeah,
cool. Yeah.
it was
How
cool.
many nights did you do? Was that a few or?
It's about 3 weeks, which isn't.
Oh, wow. Over
Yeah, it's not long for a theater show. Like, they can be like months and months and months. So 3 weeks, pretty short. But very demanding show. So by the end, I was like counting down
Yeah.
the shows till the end. But it also doesn't, because obviously they kit it out for snooker. So when you're in there, it doesn't feel like the same place at all. And you're like, I can't believe that this is where they, where all those like famous moments that you'd watch on TV have happened. It's kind of odd in that way.
Yeah. So we
So me and Wallace do Young Farmers, is kind of how we met, and it was one of the things that probably got Wallace into Young Farmers the most. Is we do a Young Farmers variety concert, and it's an absolute drop in the ocean. It's like, it's two nights at the Theatre Royal in Dumfries. There's about 200 people for two nights, and but we just do it with Young Farmers. It's people aged between 14 and 30. There's about 30 to 40 of us do it, and it's just a variety show. And there's different sketches, a few songs, a few dances. And Wallace did it, what was it, first year, last year?
Yeah.
First year was last year. And he was like a duck to water. And he just couldn't get him off stage. And it's class. Yeah. But he was a guy that's always been in agriculture, but never been in Young Farmers. And he just was like, nah, it's just not my scene. And he came down here. And he spoke to me when I was vice chair of the Young Farmers. And he was like, oh, come along and try it. And he tried concert. And then he's now a national vice chair of a committee on Young Farmers. So he's just went from zero to 100. It's all stemmed from concert.
Yeah,
so.
It did.
You get it a real buff.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And you know,
it's awesome. I've done like five now. It's class. I love it.
I don't think I'm very funny at speaking. I think I'm like a physical actor, like just doing dust. Like,
what, like dislocating scene, your shoulder? And
yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, I genuinely did dislocate my shoulder on stage. And like, so there was this scene, it's from a TV show. And I think you've been in the TV show. No, because Doctors is a soap. I can't imagine they've got comedy in it. But there's a comedy scene where basically someone goes into the doctor's surgery. They sit in the waiting room. And they're fine, like they're just there to see whatever. And then Ed comes, he sits next to me, and he's sneezing, and I start sneezing, and then the next person comes in, and the arm's thrown up, and I pick up everything, right? And like I proper went into it, throw my face on the ground, it's just fine. Did it really good in concert, and then with this other sort of secondary thing called Talent Spot that's very similar but shorter. I was doing it again, didn't even matter, like we'd already won at this point, and it just did this front of curtain where we did this scene. And I've like fallen, because like a faint is one of the things I'm doing. Fall, like hit my shoulder. I've got it in video and it like pops out of place, right? And I knew it was sore, but I was like, let's just start it. It can't be soft. So I have to do this twice with a dislocated, and I have to fall on it three more times. And yeah, it was gnarly, but it was really good fun. But the story I thought you were going to say was like, I'm not the most competitive person on the planet. There's some things make me a bit competitive, but in general, I'm really not. Like compared to you, nothing. Like I just don't have it. And then
I just love winning, and he just is like, oh yeah, it's fun to be there.
Couldn't care less. But this first night, I don't know what I gave on. I was on the stage, came up to like the changing room back, because you're like seven different parts, maybe more. And I'm like, what was it? I said, I just like shook you. And I was like, oh, I said something. I was like, I was just,
I died in this club or something.
That's it.
I died in that fucking club. Like, I was just so
I've been here like 2 days.
That's so good. Come on, man. Get your head in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I was just chilling upstairs. He just grabs me and screams at me. I'm like, I've done this like 5 years in a row and I've never been like this. Like a day.
Half the club doesn't know my name yet, and I'm just, you know, hey, yeah, good fun. It was good
class though, yeah. I just love how much it just made Wallace get the bite for like everything to do with Young Farmers. But it gets, it's an unbelievable thing, concert. Like, it's something I never thought I would do. Like, I did a wee bit of drama and I enjoyed it at school, but you get people that do it just because their friends are doing it and they want to do it for the social. Like, just it means you'll see each other on every Wednesday and Sunday night with practice.
We're so going there after this.
Yeah. So like, so a lot of the young ones, they just do it to be like, oh, that's where they go and see their mates. And then before you know it, you've probably lost half of them in the second year, but see the half you've kept. They're the ones this year. And they're like going up like, yeah, can I have a speaking part? And yeah, can I have a solo? And
is it all performance stuff?
This is, I mean, like, honestly, Chris, it's not polished. Like,
no.
And I think it's important to say that there's
a lot ad lib just.
And, in Young Farmers, there's two regions in Ayrshire and Lanark that take things really seriously and they proper train for things. But I just see Young Farmers, and the thing I love about down here, because I tried to join Ayrshire, but it was too serious. The thing I love about down here is they have a bit of crack. So like, if you go on and you just ad lib a bit and you have a bit of a laugh, that's fine. Like, it's not what you were doing, you know, it's not that sort of thing, but it's a great way to get the youngsters doing stuff. Like,
it's just about going out there and just having a laugh. You're doing it all for charity. Like, all the money that like people are paying for the tickets, it's all going into like charity. So it's all just for a bit of a laugh, really. But it's amazing how like it brings so many young people out of their shells. Like, I'm 15, 16 year old. It's unbelievable.
That sounds like a really nice community thing to be doing. Because I was thinking about this the other day, like in London, you can become anonymous very quickly. You're a one man band in a city of 10 million people, so it can be very easy to just like lose touch with those kinds of things. Whereas whenever I do anything like that, I was like, this is so good. Like, this is what I mean, this is what life's about. But like that interaction between people just kind of like really refills your cup or something like that.
It's quite interesting to say that, because I mean, in all walks of my life, it's community based. Whether I'm known as the lecturer at work, obviously everyone knows me in that sort of world. In Young Farmers now, most people, and I do a lot of speaking everywhere, so people are talking to me. When I went to London, I felt like it didn't matter at all, and it was quite, I actually quite liked it. Yeah, I was able to step away from, I love speaking to people, but sometimes you just want to switch off for a bit. And when you're in London, that was the case. But I assume that can be somewhat isolating when that's your life. You'll be seeing a lot of people on sets and stuff like that, I assume, Chris. But still, like, I can imagine that is the case.
It's the difference between being, like, I've been down in Wales recently, and in quite a small town in Wales, and you see people on the street, and they've got such a unintrusive energy about them. They're just kind of like smile. Oh, hello. Oh, the beach is nice, isn't it? Yeah, I love that. And then wander on, and that's really lovely. And then when I got back to London, it was like, the sheer energy people have is faster. It's like, don't talk to me. I've got stuff to do.
Shit to do,
which is understandable, because...
But do they? Do they have more to do than everyone else in random places? Maybe that's a wrong opinion, but I just always think that. I'm like, is everyone here that important and that busy?
No, I think you're right. I think it's filled with busyness. People are busy being busy. They're going here, they're doing that, they're doing blah, blah. You strip it down, they're probably not doing a whole lot.
Slightly moving on to a different thing, Chris. It's quite one thing that I've really enjoyed about having, on this All In series, we've had so many different professions. And professions which are slightly away from normality, which I think would be fair to say you're in. Is it a thing that you have to have other jobs to facilitate it for some time? I'm guessing now that's not the case, but for a few years, are you still working in cafes, still working in bars to get to that stage?
Yeah, 100%. So worked in a gym. I worked in a Whole Foods shop. So I was refilling big tubs of lentils and cleaning the orange juice machine. Worked in theaters quite a lot, so I'd like usher. So I watched Les Mis 400 times. and then I worked in Les Mis a lot for like 6 months and saw it eight times a week. And then I moved to the Book of Mormon and worked there and saw it a lot of times. And the difference between the people coming out of Les Mis to the Book of Mormon, I don't know if you have seen the Book of Mormon, but it's like very, very funny. So the people coming out of Les Mis would be like, have tears in their eyes and kind of grasp your arm and be like, thank you for that experience.
Got miserable in the name, so like, you know.
Exactly. The Book of Mormon, people would be coming out like screaming with laughter, and that was way more... That was a much better work environment.
Yeah, exactly, definitely. Yeah. So is just when you're actually considering that, like, you know, talking mental health and everything we speak about, but being on stage eight times a week, I'm guessing that's every night in a matinee on a Sunday, I'm assuming. That's draining, man. Like you said, 3 weeks, but 6 months.
Yeah, that's mental.
Have you got different people playing the same characters, or is it just the same person the whole time?
So I should say I wasn't in Les Mis. I was.
No, I get that. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Fine. Yeah. Yeah. So I think you get this a lot more with musicals, because vocally movement is much more demanding. So you've got loads of covers. So you've probably got about, I don't know, five covers that, maybe more than that, 10, I have no idea, that all play about four different roles. So if the lead person playing Eponine is off sick, then there'll be a couple of people that might step into that. So you do get breaks, but it's very demanding. Very demanding.
It'd be hard being one of those step in ones, because it's like one of those jobs where you're like, God, there's nothing to do. Where's the manual? Where's the script?
Yeah. I was chatting with an actor recently that she was doing a play, and sometimes they have set nights where the understudy will go on. So you kind of know, you build up to those nights. But I don't think that was one of the cases. She was literally just there in case the main person got sick. And apparently she was just like chilling in her dressing room, just like, I don't know, on her phone and doing something. And she just heard over the radio, please, can you get into your costume for blah, 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 with the beginning of act three? And she was like, oh my God, I've got to go on. I barely know the lines. I haven't rehearsed this in like weeks. I think she did it and it was all right. But just that feeling of
that's dread. Fresh so much, isn't it?
That's the fear. That is the fear.
Yeah. She's waiting for that moment.
Yeah.
And she wanted to do it so well. But yeah. How can you mentally prepare yourself for that? Like every night for it to probably not happen?
I don't know. I guess
so much easier being the main character. So much easier.
Yeah.
That is difficult being the understudy.
Yeah.
Tough. You've also got that kind of ego thing of like, oh, I wish I was the main one.
Yeah.
You kind of want to be
the main one. I can deal with that part. The fact that I know I might be thrown in, it's not knowing, like happily not thrown in. It might be randomly. That's scary. Here, Chris, it's been really cool. Really cool to chat. Really different from what we've had on here.
Yeah, it's class.
It is actually. And I think the thing that we've really started to realize, like everyone we've brought on, apart from Glenn, we know, we've known them. Hillary as well. We've came across these people. Like, obviously, you and I knew each other for years. It's quite nice to chat again for the first time in some time, in fairness. But you actually realise when you sit, if you sit down, right, and you're like, oh, who do I know in my life that would be cool for a podcast? You think of no one.
Yeah, but like when you first said it, I was like,
You've brought what, four people on so far? We've only done nine.
So
you're in the car one day and you're like, Chris. That was exactly what happened. And I was like, right, gonna ask Kirsty for the number. Thank you.
It shows you like the amount of people that have interesting stories to, I'm not saying I've got an interesting story, but like there's people out there that have like got stuff to talk about.
Chris, I'm actually gonna cut you both off. You've Heimlich maneuvered Daniel Radcliffe, and you're going to try and say that you're not interested.
That's true. That was a highlight. That was a highlight. Yeah,
definitely. But I think one of the main things, like, we'll also find in podcasting, in that, like, everybody, like, you could get a good story out of everybody. You've just got to ask the right questions and go the right way. Some people, it's a lot easier that have done,
obviously,
that have met Daniel Radcliffe. But you can get a cool story out of everybody. It's in there somewhere, and I think that's the coolest thing about what we're doing here, is that I think we could bring anybody on and it'd be interesting to somebody.
I think it'd be hard to be pretty boring. There's so many, but I mean you're very much above that. But there's one thing that we do, and I actually quite like that we've started not telling anyone until the last second.
So do I like that.
You've got a surprise coming your way, Chris. Not a physical thing, it's a question, and that question is not from us. So do you listen to podcasts by any chance?
I do, yeah.
You listen to Stephen Bartlett's Diary of a CEO?
I love that one. And now you've said that, I know what's going to happen.
Perfect. Nice. So basically, you're totally bastardized, Stephen. So Stephen, if you're listening, I know you're not. You are. Do you need a co-host? What we've done is the exact same thing. Stephen, also, if you're listening, I've never listened to your podcast. Yeah, as you know, questions taken from the person before. And that question was from an Olympian, Chris, so that's quite cool.
That's very cool.
I don't know how often you've spoken to an Olympian before. But Rose asked, and it's actually a really good question, and it's so Rose, because I don't think she knows. Her answer is just, it's all I know. Why do you do what you do? That is a belter.
Yeah.
That is a belter of a question.
Wow.
It's deep, man. It's deep.
Yeah. Well, you think about that. Wallace, why do you do what you do?
Oh, why do I do it? This is unfair. He gets time to think and I don't.
Because you've been standing staring at the question. So,
that's a good point. I'll take that on board. I do a few things, I guess, but the more I do whatever I do, and the more I get opportunities to do a lot of stuff, the reasons I do every single thing I do is because I love doing them.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many things I've been given the opportunity to do. And 6 years ago, I'd have been like, oh my God, yes, got to do that. Now I'm like, nah, I'm not doing something I don't want to enjoy.
Yeah.
I love seeing a student come in and build up to who they are. I love speaking to someone like Chris or someone like Regis Umejirineza or whoever I've spoken to. And yeah, that's why. What about you? I love cows is going to be his answer.
Yeah, I feel I can't all just say, oh, because I love what I do. Like, because, I mean, you wouldn't do it. I think I find it really fulfilling what I do. So I'm a dairy farmer, I milk cows. I find it really fulfilling that I can go outside and I'm milking in the morning. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, but I know I'm doing my part to feed the nation as well. I find that really cool. And I know before I fed myself, I've looked after my cows. I know they're all good. And I just find that really fulfilling.
Yeah.
I find it really cool.
Good one.
That's cool. I think I would say that in general, I'd say I'm quite a shy person. And I'm actually quite, I get embarrassed quite easily at like certain stuff. So being a performer sounds like the complete wrong thing to be doing. But in a way, it's like an antidote to that. It's like I'm testing myself. And if I can go on stage and do this, or I can film this TV show, then I'll have proved to myself that I've kind of overcome that. So that's definitely a big part of it for me.
That's a class reason. That's
awesome. And setting up the production company is, I guess, to like as an antidote to another side of my nature, is like, in general, I kind of wait for things to come to me. I'm not very detail orientated, all this kind of stuff. So setting up a company and having to organize it and do it is like, I'm testing myself to see if I can do that as well.
That's cool. That is, yeah. The company thing's really cool. That's quite exciting.
Yeah. Like, you're really, like, you're pushing yourself to limits where you might not feel comfortable, because I think there's so many people that just their whole lives, they just do things that they're comfortable with. And they don't go that next step just because it might feel a little bit uncomfortable. But if you really want to progress, you've got to kind of put yourself into that place, I suppose, don't you?
Yeah. And I guess prove to yourself that you're not as shy, or you're not as lazy, or you're not as, like, as you think you are. Suddenly you do it and you're like, oh, well, I wouldn't have been able to do that if I was the things that I thought I was.
Totally.
Yeah.
So that leads us on to one more question before we end. What's your question for our next guest? And I don't want you to base the question on this person, but it's the one who cycled through South America.
Oh, wow. Oh. Oh, maybe that does change what I was
going to... No. Tell us what you're going to say, and then if you want another one, I'll put it in as well.
Okay. So I was going to ask if you had... if time and resources weren't an issue, what would you create?
Oh my God, that's deep.
What would you create? Jesus Christ. Damn. Okay, so what were you starting to think when you heard who it was?
Oh, I've got, it's like so much. Like,
yeah.
Built the bike.
She did. Wow. Yeah, she built it herself, yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Yeah, or like, what... Oh no, you guys will come up with like great questions. I'll listen to the episode and I can hear what, but like, that's my question. Resources, time, what would you create? Yeah.
Here's a question.
What should you create, a bike?
Next question.
If there's a film that's based on this theory, and I didn't realize that, I'd sort of come up with this idea. And then someone told me there's a film about it. I was like, oh, that's really cool. I've got to watch it. Apparently the film was rubbish. But if time literally was a currency, I don't think I'd be alive in 2 weeks' time. Right? Now, the reason I say that is, you know what I'm like with money, first off. Like, you could earn time, so you could literally live a billionaire lives forever, yeah, because they've just earned so much time. They have so much time. But I go to the shop and I buy a roll off you. I give you an hour.
All right, okay.
Yeah. How do you think that world goes?
You just not have to buy stuff. You'd have to self-sufficient.
No, but your time would still go down.
Like, I'm a farmer. I produce milk and beef. Like, I think I've got quite a lot of time on my hands now.
So you would just sell beef for time?
Well, yeah, that...
Right.
Yeah, that's what you're saying, isn't it?
But
yeah.
then once you get rid of your... Sitting on a pretty big farm here. Let's say £25 million worth of... No, I'm joking. Let's say you sell... insert amount, doesn't matter. The equivalent of £1 million in hours, whatever that is. That's what you've got. Do you then go and start doing a job? Do you wash dishes for more hours?
Yeah, no, I keep doing exactly what I'm doing. Because I've still got the farm.
I get so addicted, man. I'd like money. Bet 4 years.
Because... I could sell off everything and I'd have a decent bit of time, but I'd know exactly how much time I had and then I'd have to do a job I hate. Whereas I'd still have to do quite a few hours now, but I would be able to...
But you could live forever on that basis.
I can live forever on what I'm doing right now. Easy. I could live forever. Because
everyone basically needs a business. That means they can live forever then.
Yes. Yeah.
That is needed to live. Yeah.
It's a really cool concept. I need to watch the film. I'm just told the rubbish. Like, but no, Chris, thank you very much for your time. And we said earlier, we're like, this will take about an hour. I think we've been on the phone for just shy of 2 hours. We've only filmed for about an hour and a half, but it absolutely flies really? By, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've loved it. I've really enjoyed chatting with you guys, and thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Awesome.
And I'm down in London at the end of December. So if you are free, you might try and say hello. Funnily enough, at a theatre play. Yeah.
Are you? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'd be good to see
it. Not for me. Yasmin said she liked it, and I was like, oh, book it. It's a number. Six. Six.
Six. Yeah, okay.
So, okay. Yeah. No, we've got a few nice days down there, so I might hit you up. But it's been good to see you again. Yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
Yeah, cheers. And as we said, everyone, the next episode, number 160, is with Liz Haynes. Liz will be talking about neurodiversity in agriculture over the next few weeks. You've got quite a few episodes coming up, as there always is, two a week. Also, the ones I've mentioned with the All In side of things. We also have Andrew Simpson, who's a friend of mine from uni. It goes by Oak, 6'6". And basically, his dad has a seed company, and... he thought, oh, I'm going to go to the States. And he basically, you like I said, harvested from Texas to Canada. That's essentially what happened. That's essentially what the company does, Hoffman Harvesting Corporate. And then he had a pretty rough time where he fainted at the wheel. And he had to stop, lost his license in the States. So he came back, studied, and that's where we met each other. And he just travels the world and is an agronomist. So that should be a good episode there, and all the rest of the Nuffield cohort as well. So thank you very much for listening. That's been Chris Jenks of Sex Education and various other TV shows. We shall see you for episode number 160. See you then.